So, good evening, everyone. I think we're still missing a couple of people, maybe. Oh, maybe we're all here. Good. So, I just want to follow on from Jill's beautiful words and meditation, and just to thank you all for being here and to really acknowledge you. And to invite you actually to acknowledge yourselves for the effort that you've made to be here, that your passion and commitment and intention, not everybody would commit to a 9-day retreat. I certainly can think of a lot of people who would run from the idea in horror. So, really to acknowledge you and celebrate you and honor yourselves for actually getting yourselves here. And it's been made it just, that much harder this time, with not being able to be together in person, having to, as Jill said, learn some new technology and checking in with your relationship to that. So I also want to acknowledge the people who've created and cared for the practices that we'll be cultivating this week. And there's a long line dating back to the time of the Buddha in ancient India, 2,600 years ago. So there's a real sense of lineage here that we are following in the footsteps of many, many devoted men and women who've gone before us and kept this practice alive. And we're really part of something very ancient, wisdom that's been passed down through the ages from one generation to the next. I was listening to one of my Zen teachers the other day, and he was saying that he was the 91st generation from the Buddha. And Zen, they keep track of these things. When you take the precepts, you get it written down. So I guess I'm the 92nd, the 92nd generation. That's a long time. And widening out from that acknowledgement and that sense of lineage, I just want to widen out to include the context of our lives at the moment, our world, and to really bring that into this space. And there's a lot going on in the world at the moment. Does it feel like that to you? Yeah. And so I want to acknowledge the suffering that surrounds us at this time. The illness and the fear and the disease and death and the violence. And for those of you in Auckland and in Melbourne, the lockdown once again, and the fear for many of the economic impact of that. Those of us who are here and those who are not here with us. In Christchurch, in a couple of days' time, the trial begins of the man who carried out the mosque attack a couple of years ago. And the trial is taking place next week. All the victims have flown in here, ready to speak their truth to the court. And when we reflect on this, we can just, it reminds us that we're so vulnerable in so many ways. And we're also reminded of what is truly of value to us: our health, our relationships, our connection with others, with nature, having enough food, clean water, shelter for our family. I know for myself, when I was in lockdown, it seemed like it became very, very apparent what was a need and what was a want. Toilet paper was a need, apparently. Unless you've travelled in India, in which case it was a want. Flour was a need, apparently, as well. But really, all the things that we often have and want, that really, it was very clear, were not necessities. So it feels like a good time right now to take some time out to just be with ourselves, to sense into how we are in all the midst, in the midst of all of this, to reconnect with what grounds us, what nourishes us, and to remember to bring kindness and gentleness to ourselves as we go through this time, to strengthen our resilience and our capacity to stay steady in the midst of life's challenges. So we can slow down. We can walk slowly and gently on this precious green earth. We can breathe deeply and mindfully and do our deep healing work of mind and body and heart. Because really, we can see there needs to be an inner and outer transformation here in our response to what's happening in our world. And the seeds of that start within each and every one of us. We can hopefully let go of some of the routines and responsibilities and stresses of our daily life and be nourished deeply here to deepen our understanding of the Buddha Dharma, these beautiful teachings of the Four Noble Truths. And through cultivation of the practices of mindfulness and inquiry, we can find that freedom, the freedom that's possible in every moment, no matter what our circumstances are, no matter how difficult life is around us. We can find that freedom and we can find an appropriate response to what's happening in our lives, in our families' lives, and to our society, and respond appropriately to the environment and with care for each other and for this beautiful planet. So the Buddha said that just like the ocean has only one taste, which is the taste of salt, his teachings have only one taste, and that's the taste of freedom or liberation from suffering. And he also said, come and see for yourself. Ehi pasiko. Come, see, and experience directly for yourself this freedom. Taste this freedom. Don't just believe even in the Buddha's teachings. It's through this direct experience, this direct engagement with the moment, with our hearts, bodies, and minds in this compassionate way that we find we cultivate that freedom. And it's very precious what we're doing here. Not so many people hear about these teachings, let alone have the opportunity or the capacity for practice. And the Buddha gave an analogy of a turtle rising from the floor of the ocean once every 100 years and a wooden ring floating on the top of the ocean, and what the odds would be of the turtle, you know, accidentally, as it surfaced, just happening to put its head through that ring. And he says that's the opportunity that we have to practice. So it's pretty small odds, really. And you might want to take a moment just to reflect how that's happened for you in your life. What circumstances led to you being here this evening, being able to be here this evening? Perhaps at some point you read a book or heard a Dharma talk or a friend told you about the Dharma. And something in you was interested enough to pursue that further. And then lots of things came together to make it possible. You had a computer with internet capability. You were able to take time off work if you work. And perhaps there are people in your life who are helping in various ways. And so it can be useful to just reflect for a moment on everything that has come together, really quite miraculously when you consider the wider world picture, for you to be able to be here. For myself, I feel that life has been incredibly generous to me in this. So we have a daily schedule for our time together, for our days. And Jill's posted it on the group Google Drive, but I'll just go through it briefly to make sure that we're all familiar. So the times I'm going to mention are New Zealand times, so apologise to those of you elsewhere. I hope you can do the maths. So 7:30 in the morning, there's an optional group sitting, which will be led by Jill. And then after that, that's 45 minutes. And then at 9:30, we come together for morning instructions and a sit together. At 11 a.m., there will be small groups for the day, and Jill will post, we'll post the small groups on the notice board, which is that folder that you've all found by now, I hope. And then at 11:45, there will be another optional group sitting, and we're, I think, still looking for a practice leader for that, somebody who's willing to keep time and then ring the bell at the end. So maybe at the end of the evening, if you'd like to do that, you can let Jill or I know. And then 12:30 to 2:30, there's a break for lunch, and then we come back at 2:30, and there will be some exciting things. So it varies from day to day, but it will involve some relational practice with each other. So bringing the relational into our practice here. And then at 4:45, not 11:45 p.m. At 4:45 p.m. there'll be another group sit, which Adi's very kindly offered to lead. And then at 7:30 we come together for the Dharma talk and a sitting that follows that, and Jill and I will lead that. Sorry, not Jill, I will lead that. And we'll finish the day at 9 p.m. So I hope that is clear to everybody. And I know that you've all been asked to make the commitment to turning up for the 9:30, 2:30 and 7:30 sessions, and also at 11 for the small groups. Everything else is optional. But I really encourage you to participate with the schedule as much as possible. You're going to get more out of the retreat by participating. And some of you may have been looking forward to the opportunity for to really go deep into samadhi on a 9-day retreat. And if you're living alone and you have the support to do that and you want to use this retreat in that way, then that's fine. However, most people tend to get more out of this kind of retreat by taking up the invitation to practice more in the relational space and to bring our practice into our daily lives and really see how it intersects. And so Jill and I really encourage you to make the most of this different opportunity. It's really helpful if you can do some formal practice in each of the four periods of the day, so the early morning, the morning, the afternoon and the evening. And in between, to bring the clarity of mind that comes as we settle in to observing our interactions with our world, with those we live with our immediate home environment. We can see our families and our partners and cohabitants as part of our practice rather than something that impinges upon our practice. And sometimes on an in-person retreat, as opposed to an online one, if we've practiced for a long time, we can find the retreat form can become quite easy, and we can easily slip into a kind of complacency. And, you know, it's like there's not much grist for the mill. And I think that this form of practicing relationally and in the midst of our daily life offers us plenty of grist as we come up against our daily circumstances. And I think it's also good to notice if we're experiencing any attachment to that deep, intense practice. And it's not that there's anything wrong with deep, intense practice, but just to notice how we are with letting go of that and entering into a new form here. And as a support for integrating your practice more fully into your life on an ongoing basis, this is really an opportunity to experiment and explore how that might work for you. So I really encourage you to take this up. Another important container for our time together is the practice of silence, noble silence. It's an ancient and wonderful practice that's been taken up by men and women down the generations who've been sincere about inquiring into these deep questions that move through our hearts. Questions like, who am I really? What is my purpose here on this planet at this point in time? To inquire into what is my work, my true work? What are my gifts, my strengths? What can I give? How do I live in a harmonious way with others? There are so many questions that we can inquire into here and to awaken this beautiful heart practice. So we're in a slightly different form here with an online retreat, and silence has a different aspect to it for us through this time. We're in our homes, we're still relating to the people that we live with. Perhaps we're still doing our daily chores like cooking, and unless we're lucky enough to have someone to care for us in this way. But we're also carving out space in our day for stillness, a sacred space, a time to be quiet, and to reduce our engagement with the world just a little. And so, as Jill said before, we invite you during this time on retreat to just reduce a little your contact and interaction with the world. It might not be the time to start reading that gripping novel that you've been looking forward to, or writing the novel that you've been thinking of writing. You might also want to stay away from your car and live a little more slowly and a little closer to home. You might not have a choice about that. Social interactions with friends. And so just to simplify life a little. And you know, there'll be time to include all of those things in our practice on day 10 of the retreat. This is a 9-day retreat. So we can allow the heart and mind to still and to access the silence deep inside of us. At the deep core of who we are, there is this vast, beautiful spaciousness and silence. The silence is before thought, before the mind moves, a wordless dimension of the heart. And this is a beautiful resource for us to deepen into the great well of silence. And through that silence, we find a deep communion with all of life. So I invite you to enter into that silence, to trust that silence, and to let it be your guide. There's physical stillness and silence. And then there's a deepening silence in the mind so that we quieten down the chattering mind. And when there's a quietness inside our being, then it deepens in what we could call a mystical silence. And then there's a true communion. It doesn't have divisions. It doesn't have labels. And in that silence, our heart smiles. So I'll finish there, and I think, Jill, we've got some relational work at the moment. Yeah, coming up now. Good. So I'll hand back to Jill at this point. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.